Hello, travelers, and welcome to Go See, Do, Explore.
Here, we dive deep into the heart of travel, sharing hidden gems, unforgettable experiences, and the stories that make each destination unique.
Whether you're a seasoned traveler or dreaming of your next getaway, you're in the right place to get inspired.
I'm Christopher.
And I'm Ashley.
And together, we'll set the course for your next great adventure and discover the stories that make each place unforgettable.
It's time to go, see, and do more. Let's explore. Hello, and welcome to the third episode of our podcast. Today, we're going to be talking about a long weekend trip to Walt Disney World for a holiday weekend. And I guess we should kind of preface here by saying that I am definitely a Disney adult. When I was a kid, we went to Disney every year. And then when I was in college, I took the fandom up a level, and I was the co-host of the Generation Mouse Disney podcast. I'm sure it's maybe something you can still find.
I think it's still out there.
One of the reasons that the podcast ended was because we realized that we still love Disney, but there is more out there in the world to see. And I didn't want to be one of those people that's going to Disney World for every single vacation. There's anything wrong with that, but
it wasn't for us.
It wasn't for us. There is so many more places that we wanted to go. So I had a crazy idea that we should take this long weekend that I had coming up and go to Disney World. And I think thousands of other people had that exact same plan.
Yeah, it was real busy.
Probably the longest lines that I've ever seen. But I guess we can start the trip by talking about flying with Frontier. So we took a late night flight to Orlando.
Late night. I mean, it was 5 o'clock.
Oh, that's right. The way there was. And I know we talked about in the first episode our kind of love-hate relationship with the ultra low-cost airlines. So we were on Frontier grudgingly. Is grudgingly a word?
Begrudgingly.
Begrudgingly.
It was fine.
And there were no complaints about this experience on Frontier.
Yeah, truth, we departed on time and we arrived on time or early for all of our flights. I mean, there's the whole hassle about, you know, we weren't sat together on the way down. We were sat together on the way back, but they had put us in the very back row of this plane, row 41 or whatever, us in the toilet or like the back row. So we coughed up money and paid to sit farther up.
Well, and that flight also landed at 11:50 at night, and we didn't want to wait, I don't know, 45 minutes for everyone else to deplane that late.
I had hit my limit.
There's already a lot of waiting this week.
Yeah.
Weekend, I should say. So we landed at Disney, and we chose to stay this time, or we landed in Orlando, I should say, and we chose to stay at Pop Century, which is a value resort at Walt Disney World.
Value Plus?
It might be considered Value Plus these days. So Pop Century, along with the All-Stars and Art of Animation, are considered Disney's value resorts, in air quotes there, especially because Art of Animation can be very expensive.
I just think that Pop is loads better than the All-Stars. You know, they're not really in the same. I mean, they're the same in a lot of ways, but I don't know. It seems better to me.
The rooms at Pop Century went through a refurbishment not that long ago. So they had the Hey Disney, which is Disney's Echo, essentially, in the room. We never used it, but it was there. And they were just
listening to us.
Always watching. But I think probably the biggest perk for staying at Pop Century is the Skyliner, which gets you an additional means of transportation to Epcot and Hollywood Studios, whereas the All-Stars have exclusively busing.
Yeah, this was our first time with the Skyliner, and it was really awesome. It's not as good as being in a monorail resort, obviously, but short of that, it was really, really terrific.
And there is also Caribbean Beach is a moderate resort that is also on the Skyliner line, and it is the hub for the Skyliner. I think we looked at our original estimate. We could have paid $400 more for the long weekend to stay at Caribbean Beach, but we never experienced any sort of long lines or anything that feels like it would have made that additional cost worth it.
No, in fact, the line between Caribbean Beach and Pop was never the issue. That was true. Always short and clear. If there were any backups or anything, it was always on the other side that you'd have to deal with anyway.
And I should say that we are what they call commando tourists when it comes to the Disney parks. So we tend to be at the parks at rope drop and stay sometimes to park close, which on our Magic Kingdom day was we were in Magic Kingdom at 7, they dropped the rope for the on-site guests at 7:30. And then we were there until 11 p.m. So honestly, paying additional for a higher end resort just isn't worth it when you're barely in the room.
No, we did that once and that was really dumb.
Yeah, our last trip, we stayed in Coronado Springs and we had many regrets.
Yeah.
But anyway, we've talked about Pop Century and the Skyliner enough. The other thing we decided to do for this trip is we got the Park Hopper, which when we booked our trip anyway, it was about $100 per person for the length of your stay, I think up to 10 days or something like that. And it allows you to start your day in one park and hop to any other park that you choose for the day. And as of January, you could do that at any time in your day, although the buses didn't run for the hopping until 10 a.m., which, I mean, if you're hopping before 10 a.m., what was your point in going to the first park? Anyway, but just something to note that we made use of the Park Hopper this time. So our first day, like I said, we went to the Magic Kingdom bright and early. And so there are two attractions at Disney World currently, when we're recording this, that have a virtual queue. And if you're staying on site, that allows you at 7 a.m. to log onto the app and try to secure a spot for the virtual queue, which basically makes it so that you're not waiting 3 hours in line for the hot new attraction. And at Magic Kingdom, that is Tron. So our very first day, we walked, we got off the bus at the Magic Kingdom, I want to say at like 6:55, and tried to get that Tron virtual queue, and we didn't get it. And it was kind of a shock because we didn't expect it to happen.
It was within seconds. I'm imagining, you know, the sheer volume of people trying to get into that queue right at 7 a.m. because really I'm very fast with my phone, and it was within a few seconds, it was already full. So I just, you know, I was unlucky.
We had you do it because you've been very lucky with those things in the past.
My first failure. This was my first failure. I'm normally very good.
So kind of
the rest of it was great.
Right. Kind of dishearteningly, we went to the Tomorrowland space for rope drop so that we can go right to Space Mountain, which is always a favorite of ours.
Yeah, I really like that one.
And we got a lot done on that first day in the Magic Kingdom. Although we did notice that the wait times were getting higher than I was expecting. The crowd calendar that I was watching said that Magic Kingdom was supposed to be a 6 out of 10. And it was, I believe, higher than that. So we just kind of expected that we would have to wait a little bit.
We knew it was going to be busy, but we've been to Disney World many times before when it was busy. This one was just harder to manage throughout, as we'll discuss.
Yeah, I mean, we went to Disneyland last spring and the crowd calendar said it was a 10 out of 10. And we were able to ride pretty much everything we wanted to ride that day. And then, I mean, you know, the crazy that we did, and we were in the Magic Kingdom on October 1st, 2021, the 50th anniversary, and we walked onto Space Mountain multiple times. This trip was different than that.
You should tell the people, when you say crowd calendar, what are you talking about?
If you're planning a Disney trip, there are many different options for choosing when to go called crowd calendars. I tend to use the touringplans.com crowd calendar that'll tell you what are busy days in the parks. And then once you pick your dates, they'll tell you which parks will be busiest on those dates. But there are lots of other crowd calendars if you don't want to subscribe to touringplans.com.
Sure. Okay, cool.
But I would say even with the higher wait times, we were able to do pretty much everything we wanted to do. Would you agree with that on our Magic Kingdom day?
The only thing we didn't get to do, which we circled back to later, was Big Thunder Mountain Railroad.
That I wanted to do Seven Dwarfs Mine Train because we've only ridden that once. Back in our trip in 2014, and I remember thinking that it wasn't worth the amount of time that we waited on that trip, so I didn't think that I would be happy waiting 150 minutes or whatever ridiculous number it got up to, but I have ridden it, and so I was okay with missing out on that. So after we kind of accomplished everything we wanted to that day, we took our park hopping option, and we rode the monorail to Epcot, which Epcot has always been my favorite Disney park.
Yeah, same.
And even though it's kind of lost some of its edutainment, I still love it. I mean, current Figment is not anything on the 1980s Figment, but definitely not worth a 50-minute wait, which we saw later in the week. I would not wait 50 minutes for that.
Yeah. No, it's my favorite part, too. I don't know if I could really even tell you why. It just is.
And I have to say that part of the reason I wanted to go to Epcot this day was because I wanted to get the Imagination popcorn bucket that was exclusively there for Festival of the Arts, and I got it.
That popcorn bucket was a lot of work.
Especially fitting it into my backpack that fits under the seat on Frontier. I was really glad they didn't make me check it into that size compartment and accidentally broke my popcorn bucket, but all good.
Yeah.
So when we were at Epcot, we got the popcorn bucket, we rode the land, and we rode the boat ride in Mexico, which are typically always walk-ons. And I think that was all we did, right?
Yeah. I have real mixed feelings about that boat ride in Mexico. Like, I kind of love it. People, like, really. But I really, really hate, like, the Donald Duck situation. And I just ignore it and end up looking around.
I've sent him YouTube videos of El Rio del Tiempo for him to watch.
I know, I need to watch. I just feel like it could be so much better without the annoying duck situation.
I'm hoping at some point they retheme it to Coco, but
yeah,
that is neither here nor there. Could
retheme it to Mexico, but the IP, I think, wouldn't allow
it. It used to be Mexico.
I know. What's wrong with just the Mexico Pavilion being Mexico?
So after that, we took our first Skyliner ride back to Pop and dropped off my popcorn bucket so I wouldn't continue stabbing people with the sharp end. And then we really didn't have much time at the resort before we headed back for our dinner reservation at Skipper Canteen, which my plan is to talk about the food at the end here. But we caught Happily Ever After, which I had never seen. And I will be honest that I should have mentioned before we left Magic Kingdom, at 1 o'clock, they open up the virtual queue for Tron again. And we were riding the TTA at the time, the Tomorrowland Transit Authority People Mover, one of my favorite Disney attractions that you can usually get on without too long of a wait. And we were able to score our Tron virtual queue for later in the afternoon. So we had our dinner. We rode probably the TTA again.
Yeah, we did that a bunch.
And then we watched Happily Ever, like I was in the middle of saying before I remembered. It was our first time seeing Happily Ever After, because when we were there in 2021, they were debuting the fireworks show that I don't even remember what it was called. The only dinner reservation that we could get for that day was at Skipper Canteen at the time of the fireworks. And we had decided that we would rather sit down and enjoy a nice meal versus watch the fireworks. I don't know what that says about me as a Disney fan. But so we are finally getting to see Happily Ever After. And I'm not one that wants to camp out on the curb for an hour or more to watch a fireworks show. So we went into Fantasyland and watched the fireworks from the backside, which was actually really cool. I mean, you miss all the projections on the front of the castle, but you kind of get this like 360 feeling with the fireworks going off all around you, which was pretty cool.
Yeah, and it was a lot less crowded.
Oh, for sure. We were able to just kind of walk up by the carousel and there were maybe like, I don't know, 15, 20 other people were there within minutes. And yeah, we got to experience it. Not 100% because you don't get the projection, but yeah, it was acceptable to me.
The fireworks go off very close to you, some of them. It was kind of shocking to me that you're allowed to stand there, but you are.
And so, yeah, after that, we rode Pirates. That was what we did after that. We did Pirates. Uh-huh. And then it was time. Our time was called for our virtual queue for Tron. So we ran back there and we pretty much, despite what the virtual queue, it was still a good like 40 minute wait. Yeah. And by the time we got off the attraction, it was 10 minutes until the park closed. So we literally ran to the other end of the park to get on Jungle Cruise, one of the probably like the second to last boat before the park closed. So it was a crazy day, but it was a lot of fun.
It was a bit of a rowdy Jungle Cruise boat.
It was. It was the nerds. The Disney nerds were on that boat for sure.
Yeah.
I guess we should talk about Tron a little bit, too. So it's a very smooth coaster. I've never seen Tron, so I don't really fully understand what it's trying to, I don't know. It was like putting me into the, what was it even called?
Into the Tron.
Putting me into the Tron.
No, I don't
know. Pixelated. I don't fully understand what was happening.
It was cool, though.
It was cool. It was a very smooth roller coaster, but it was
The Tron people are probably pretty mad right now.
Yeah, I'm sure. I know Tron people.
Sorry.
Sorry, Tron people.
We just haven't seen it.
Very smooth roller coaster. I would say probably the most aggressive, like, beginning of a roller coaster, whatever you call that, like, when they start you.
Yeah.
Well, of any Disney roller coaster.
I think part of it is the way you're seated. You're on this bike thing, and they hold you in sort of by your back and then by the backs of your legs. It's hard to describe, but if you go online, you'll see what it's like. It's like a bike, basically, but a bike that you can't fly off of. And so, yeah, if you're not really in your seat, then definitely you're going to get thrown back when it starts because it accelerates quickly.
I was very nervous about riding it before we got on it, just because I had no idea. Like, I saw the pictures and I saw the people, they have the demo car that you can sit in outside to kind of see how it works. And it, I don't know, that made me very nervous. I saw the handicap accessible one at the back and I was like, maybe I should sit in that. I don't know.
No, but really, it holds you in very well. It looks kind of weird, but when you sit in it, I don't know, I felt fine. I didn't feel like I was going to fly out or anything.
And if you choose not to do the virtual queue or you don't get the virtual queue for Tron, you can buy an individual lightning lane, which is something I don't really want to go into, but I can kind of give you some places to look at the end of this podcast if you don't understand what I'm talking about. We chose to just try again at 1 o'clock because we had an additional time where we could come back to the Magic Kingdom if we didn't get it. And because of the holiday weekend, I want to say it was something like $20 a person for that individual lightning lane. And that just seemed very expensive for what I knew would be a very short ride. So, but those are some decisions that you get to make when you go to Disney World.
Yeah. I should say from my perspective, I really, really enjoyed Tron. I thought it was a great roller coaster. Like a lot of Disney rides, it left me wishing that it was longer. Right. When Disney builds things that are really, truly roller coasters, they're never usually very long. I feel like they don't have the space in the parks for that. They don't want it to be like Cedar Point where they've got these like big metal scaffolds and stuff like that. So they're usually more building kind of the theming and like, but it's a really short ride. And after that kind of a wait, it's a little bit of a letdown. But the ride itself is very cool. Like if it didn't have the long wait, I would ride it over and over and over again. So in 10 years, you know, maybe it'll be more possible to do that.
Well, as I said to you, we rode Seven Dwarfs Mine Train literally 10 years ago. And when we were there this weekend, it was 160 minutes or something crazy like that. And that is even shorter, I would say, than Tron.
Yeah, this one, Tron's a little better than Seven Dwarfs Mine Train.
Well, Seven Dwarfs Mine Train has the kid appeal more than Tron, which is probably partly why the line is so long. But
yeah, right.
Anyway, we digress. So our second day, we got to sleep in a little bit. We got to do early entry at 8:30. And we were up at 7, of course, to try to get the virtual queue for Guardians of the Galaxy, which this time we were successful. We got our callback for Guardians for the virtual queue around lunchtime. We had just gone to our first Festival of the Arts booth, and we got to eat some grilled cheese in the rain, which was an interesting experience.
Very wet.
It was very wet that day. I should mention that this day in Epcot was the first of 2 days that was projected to rain all day. So we got the Guardians virtual queue. And then before we entered Epcot, we actually walked over to the Beach Club, which is near the International Gateway entrance to Epcot. And we got a little pastry and coffee while we waited for the park to open for early entry. And we headed right for the France Pavilion, where there is Remy's Ratatouille Adventure, which was new during our trip in 2021. And we actually got to ride Remy's on the second day it was open. Luckily, the virtual queue part is gone. But what that means is that it can get to be a very, very long line for Remy. So we did that very first thing. And I want to say by the time we were leaving, it was up to a 70-minute wait already at like 8:40.
It's one of these rides where I feel like a lot of these newer Disney rides, too, they don't have a lot of throughput. Like, I just feel like they can't get people through them that quickly. And so they really do back up. And they're popular, of course, too.
I would say it's one of the best rides right now at Epcot. I love it. My biggest complaint with Remy, so they use the trackless ride system, which is really cool because you can never tell where your vehicle is going to go, as opposed to, you know, an old school ride that has a track that you're following. And so obviously you know where it's going to go. But they intermix real elements and virtual elements. And sometimes I get motion sickness. That can be rough. But what makes it even worse on Remy is that they throw in a 3D element. And when things are blurry in that situation, it makes it worse for me. But that one, I don't know, because of the real elements mixed in, it doesn't bother me as much as one that we'll talk about later in the trip.
I think the 3D is not that in your face, too, compared to some of the other ones. Like, in the beginning it is, but then you're kind of away from it for a lot of it.
And you move away from it quickly and you're seeing real elements. So the motion sickness doesn't bother me on that one as much as one specific ride we're going to talk about later.
It is blurry, like a lot of 3D. It still just looks blurry.
Imagineers, why do you keep doing this to us? Just make it clear in 2D. But anyway, from there, we went to another one of my favorite attractions in Epcot, which is Soarin', which at the time was back to Soarin' Over California, which they switched back to for the 100th anniversary. And I still love it. I know you prefer Soarin' Over California.
They're both good. They're both good.
But the video for Soarin' Over California is not as clear and modern, I think that's for sure. But I do love the soundtrack for Soarin' Over California.
I just like the smells of California. I prefer that.
Make that a clip. I just like the smells from California.
The pine and the orange are just, if you know, you know. Canada, they smell great.
And then we saw some of our other favorites. We did The Land again. We did Spaceship Earth.
I sang along with all the land songs. They don't have words.
They should, because there's a classic 80s Epcot song that I won't sing right now. We got in the single rider line for Test Track, only for it to then start raining. And for some reason, Disney doesn't want to put you on a car accelerating up to 65 miles per hour outdoors in the rain. I don't understand the problem.
I blame General Motors.
So we...
This is a real hack, though. Like, if people don't know, if you can, ride Test Track single rider, like, all day. If you're not in a situation where it really matters that you're together, obviously, we prefer to ride rides together, but the wait is, you know, a tenth.
Right.
It's like a tenth of the time, and you can just whip through that as much as you want, assuming that it's open.
Right. But in any sort of rain, like I said, because of the outdoor track and the high speeds, they do close Test Track in the rain. But most times that it rains in Florida, I don't think it rains all day, like for these 2 days. So we were lucky enough to later in the day be able to come back and ride it when the rain had stopped. But if there is rain on the forecast in your Epcot day, just be prepared that Test Track will be closed.
Are we going to talk about Club Cool during food?
Oh, we could talk about Club Cool now. I forgot about it.
We should talk about Club Cool now.
Chris loves Club Cool. I'm okay with Club Cool. I'm not really a carbonated beverage fan.
No, and you know, I don't drink much soda these days. But Club Cool is a Coca-Cola space. And they have different products from around the world that they produce. It's kind of famous or infamous for one called Beverly, which is from Italy. Because people love to hate Beverly. It's amazing. And I don't care what anyone says. Like, I wish that we had this product in the United States. It is citrusy. It's got some bitterness in like a really great way. And, you know, Ashley tried it this time after being among the crowd of people that love to hate on Beverly. It's just like, oh, that's actually pretty good.
It does leave a bitter aftertaste. And if you're someone that's going for a Coke product for that like overly sweet, which I'm just not, because like I said, I've never been into carbonated drinks. Beverly is not that bad. I don't know. It gets a bad rap.
It gets a bad rap, but it's actually delicious. I think it would be great mixed with gin. It was great mixed with other fruit soda, which I did while at Club Cool. That was really awesome. But yeah, Beverly should be sold in the U.S., I would say.
Well, if we take that trip to Italy, maybe we can find some Beverly for you.
No, I heard they don't even sell it in Italy anymore. We need to look into this.
Oh, that's disappointing.
Yeah, like it's only at Epcot now or something.
That seems unlikely. Why are they making it just for Epcot?
We'll find out.
We will get the answers that the people want to know. So we had dinner in Epcot that day at the San Angel Inn, which is in the Mexico Pavilion. And there are tables that are right up against the boat ride that goes through the Mexico Pavilion. But we, like I said, we'll talk about food at the end. And then we rode the land again, and we were on a boat.
We rode Mexico again because we were right there.
Oh, we did do Mexico. Yeah, we walked right onto Mexico. And then we rode the land with one other person in our boat.
Yeah.
Like, who are these nerds riding the land at 7:50 at night or whatever it was?
The land after dark. Really cool.
Have totally different. Yeah.
Because there's actually those greenhouses, they don't really have much in the way of lighting. So it is dimmer. It's kind of cool.
And then we ended the day watching Luminous. And just like I said, for Happily Ever After, we're not ones that will kind of stake out our spot for the fireworks hours in advance. So since it was raining, the crowd was a little less. I think a lot of people had kind of filtered out earlier in the day. So we were able to get a spot on the bridge between the France Pavilion and the International Gateway, which is supposed to be one of the best viewing spots for Luminous. And I have to say, I much preferred Luminous to, I think Harmonious was the last one. We did catch that on our last trip in 2021, and I didn't care for it because you had to stake out a spot against the lagoon hours in advance, or you wouldn't see the projections that were on the water. This one was one that if you were a little farther back, you were still able to see what was going on. There was some original music again, just like old Illuminations, which will probably always be my favorite Disney nighttime spectacular. Yeah, overall, I would say it's better for me than Harmonious was.
Yeah, I agree. I enjoyed it. I will always miss Illuminations, and I'm not one of those people that there's always like, oh, that thing that we had 20 years ago was better. But oh, there's only one Illuminations in the world. That was a one-of-a-kind show.
Well, I think not to go down an Illuminations rabbit hole, but Illuminations, it didn't have that Disney intellectual property. There wasn't any famous Disney songs in it. It was entirely new music for the Millennium Celebration that was
And it was incredible music. Disney music is obviously really famous and well-known. But it's got a certain vibe to it because of what it is. I don't want to call it cheesy necessarily, but it's very showy kind of music for shows. Illuminations, it was a serious composition. It was a piece of music that you would hear in an orchestra hall, and that to a very epic and timed fireworks show where, by the way, the world catches on fire. That part maybe not so great. But anyway, Luminous, pretty good. Pretty good, I would say.
If you never had the joy of watching Illuminations, it's on YouTube. Pause this and go watch Illuminations.
Yeah, it's pretty incredible.
I think it is time for our wine break.
Okay, let's go to the wine break. Okay, we're here for the wine break. And what we have today is Grenache, 2020 Grenache from the Valley Project. The Valley Project is a cooperative of winemakers in, they have a tasting room and a store right down in Santa Barbara in the Funk Zone. We went there last March. This is our last bottle from there. We've been having it mostly at like family events. We've brought it. This Grenache was one of my favorite wines, usually a high alcohol wine, and this one is no exception at 14.5. That's definitely on the higher end, but quite flavorful. I really like it. I'm sad this is our last bottle. This is related to this episode in a way because on that trip, we also went to Disneyland. Close enough, right?
We should have had some Fess Parker. That would have brought Disney together. We've never been to Fess Parker. But Fess Parker also has a winery in Santa Barbara. And he was on the original Davy Crockett way back
in the day. I remember this now. You point when we were in Santa Barbara, you told me that and I forgot it almost instantly.
You just looked at me like, what are you talking about? Where are you going with this?
One of us knows a lot more about Disney than the other. That's for sure. But no, really great wine. Really love it. Hope I can get some more Valley Project one of these days.
All right, so day three at Disney, it was another early day. Early entry at Animal Kingdom started at 7:30 that day. And so we were rope dropping, as they say, to Flight of Passage, which is an Avatar-themed attraction in the world of Avatar at Animal Kingdom. And it's another, that and Navi River Journey, which are the two big attractions in Pandora. We had never experienced them before. This was a first for us, because the last time we were in Animal Kingdom was 2014 and they were being built. So while these are not new attractions, they were new to us. The lady that was next to me on that ride absolutely loved Flight of Passage, but this is the one that affected my motion sickness real bad. So it's a Soarin'-like attraction where you're kind of hovering in front of a screen, but just like with Remy, it's in 3D just to mess with me. And constant 3D blurriness, and I left with a terrible headache that didn't really go away the entire day. So if you're someone that's prone to motion sickness, especially digital motion sickness like I am, or screen-based motion sickness, this is one you might want to rethink.
Yeah, I don't get motion sick, and I liked it.
I should say that unlike Soarin', you are riding on a banshee, so it's kind of a mix of like Soarin' with Tron in there.
Yeah.
Predated Tron by quite a few years, though.
It is blurry, but I had fun. I don't know. It wasn't as good as some of the other ones, but don't be discouraged if you're not someone who gets motion sickness, because it really was a pretty good ride.
The second attraction of the day, well, we stopped for a little light breakfast, but then we noticed that the wait time for Kilimanjaro Safari was only 10 minutes. And I should mention that by this point, I think Flight of Passage was up to 80 or so. So I have no idea why Kilimanjaro Safari was so short, but we ran right there. I think it may not have opened until official park opening, so I don't know if that had something to do with it. But we, 10 minutes, we got on the safari, and we saw a lot of animals, whereas when you visit later in the day, they're kind of dormant. Like, there was a lion that was roaring right when we went around the corner.
It was almost posing. I got a good video of it.
You'll have to watch the video when that comes out for that moment. But yeah, it was probably one of the best moments on Kilimanjaro Safari that I've ever experienced since that park opened in 1998.
Yeah.
And then we noticed that the wait time at Expedition Everest, which is one of our favorite roller coasters, was still pretty low. So we ran, like almost literally ran over to Everest. Even though I should mention it was still raining and this is a mostly outdoor roller coaster. Yeah,
the rain was picking up.
The rain was picking up. So we decided that now is the time to do Everest without getting 100% totally drenched.
Mm.
That happened later in the day on a different roller coaster that's outside. And yeah, Everest is always fun. It's a favorite of ours, even though the Yeti has been permanently in B mode. And then we actually rode that twice because this is another one that has a single rider line and a good way to beat the crowds that can build up on Everest. So then we went back to Pandora and we did the other attraction there, which is the Navi River Journey, which is essentially a boat ride through Pandora. We waited kind of a long time for this, partly because of the rain. We're like, well, what else are we going to do? Walk around and get all wet. And so maybe that's part of why.
It seemed like it went down maybe for a minute.
Yeah, it definitely went down for a while. But I want to say we waited over an hour, which is something I've never done ever for a Disney ride. And the payoff just wasn't worth it.
It's like Pandora meets Mexico Pavilion.
Minus Donald Duck.
It's certainly better for at least for that reason. Yeah, there's no duck running around.
And then the last thing we did in Animal Kingdom is we went to Festival of the Lion King, which is a kind of acrobatic retelling of the Lion King with music. And it's a lot of fun. The main reason that we went to Festival of the Lion King instead of just hopping somewhere else at this point was because when we were at Animal Kingdom the last time in 2014, I had lost my glasses on Expedition Everest and we went to Festival of the Lion King and I could not see. So this was kind of like a redeeming moment for me.
It's a stressful moment for me.
Yeah, it was a stressful moment, but we did recover them.
Yeah.
Festival of the Lion King was a blurry moment in my memory, so now I have a clear memory. So after that, we hopped to the Magic Kingdom. My shoes were going squish at this point, and we noticed that the wait time for Big Thunder Mountain, which we hadn't got to on our main Magic Kingdom day, was low because it was raining. And so we went there and got thoroughly soaked. It was like riding Splash Mountain in the summer.
It was raining pretty hard. And what you realize when you ride Big Thunder Mountain in the rain is it actually was kind of a long ride compared to a lot of the other roller coasters, especially. I know Big Thunder is not quite the roller coaster that some of these other ones are, but yeah, it's got three hills. You're on there for a while and mostly outside.
Yeah, I remember specifically that the tops of my legs were wet, which up to that point I had been able to keep those dry. But yeah, so Big Thunder in the rain can be fun, but it can also be very wet. And that day was chilly too. Yeah, so it was
fun.
I have no regrets.
No, not at all. It was fun. I enjoyed it.
So then we went back to the TTA and we rode Space Mountain and it was about time to head over to Animal Kingdom Lodge for our dinner at Sanaa, which is one of my favorites and we will get to in a minute. But after dinner, we decided that we were very wet. After 2 days of being very wet, we were ready to just retire to the room and change into dry clothes. So that was the end of our third day, was what was spent watching, which Harry Potter was it? In the hotel room.
Mm-hmm. Goblet of Fire that night. There was a Harry Potter marathon on TV that weekend, so watched a bunch of Harry Potter movies.
So the next morning was a little bit of a later morning because the studios open at 8:30, so early park entry is at 8. We got there pretty early. We headed right for Rise of the Resistance, which is in Galaxy's Edge, which is the Star Wars land in Disney's Hollywood Studios. And I am not in any way a Star Wars fan. I think I've seen the original trilogy and it's fine. First I come at Tron, now I come at Star Wars. But Rise of the Resistance is absolutely one of my favorite rides at Disney World. And I know if it would have existed when I was a kid, it would have terrified me the way the cast members, I don't want to say yell at you, but they're trying to interrogate you to find out where the base is. And yeah, I really do enjoy Rise.
Yeah, I think, in my opinion, it's the best one for experience.
But this is kind of where we noticed that on this day, the last day of our trip, the wait times were going to be very high. So we left Rise of the Resistance. I want to say getting there at early park entry early, we waited maybe 12 minutes to get through the queue and onto the ride. Right after that, Toy Story Mania was a 40-minute wait. And I think it's possible that it wasn't actually 40 minutes, but that was that's long for that early in the day. And we did Toy Story Mania. It's been around for a long time. It's a great ride. It's definitely better than Buzz Lightyear at Magic Kingdom. But after that, we were kind of left looking at the wait times on the app with nothing really we would want to wait for. So we did Muppet Vision, which is a 3D show that's been at the studios since possibly park open, maybe early 90s, if not 89. And it's always fun. Cheap 3D tricks and all that. But then we had a lunch reservation at 50s Primetime, and we were kind of stuck with literally nothing else we could do in time so that we wouldn't miss our lunch reservation.
We got stuck on Runaway Railway.
Oh, I forgot about that. Yeah, we did wait for Runaway Railway because when we rode it in 2021, I was left with a kind of negative impression. And I was like, this ride can't be that bad. This must just be me. So we rode it again and I still didn't like it. I don't know. I don't get it. I don't understand. People love it. It's not for me. It's way too jerky. I mean, you get the Mickey and Minnie characters, but they're the Mickey and Minnie characters that are more modern, and I don't care for them. Yeah, I like Rise of the Resistance better. I think Rise of the Resistance is a smoother ride.
Well, and then we got stuck.
Oh, I forgot that we actually got stuck at the exit for like, I don't know, 7-10 minutes, something like that. Yeah, I forgot. Wow. That was gone from my brain.
Blocked it out.
I blocked it out because I don't like that ride. People love it.
I don't get it. I don't know.
I'm sure people with kids like it, maybe. I don't know. I don't think I would have liked Big Joffle like that as a child either. Yeah. I don't get it.
For a trackless ride, it's awfully rough.
Yeah. So we had our lunch and then we hopped over to Epcot. We took the boats. It was a nice, relaxing kind of almost end of our trip.
The friendship boat.
The friendship boats, correct. We waited for kind of a long time for Spaceship Earth. And then we did Test Track Single Rider. And then it was time for our individual Lightning Lane that we had purchased for Guardians of the Galaxy. And I realized I didn't talk about Guardians back in our Epcot day. But that is possibly my favorite ride currently at Disney World. It's a roller coaster. It's a lot of fun. It's got upbeat music. I recently read somewhere that it's the most expensive roller coaster in the world. And it definitely shows.
Yeah.
We liked it so much that we bought a Lightning Lane, I think, for $18 a person on our last day just to get to experience it again without the virtual queue long line stuff. If you are going to be at Epcot and you are looking for something a little thrilling, definitely ride Guardians. It's great.
Yeah, it's like if they built Space Mountain last year. It's kind of how I think about it. It's got kind of the same vibe. I just got a pre-ride show and all that, which obviously Space Mountain doesn't really have. I mean, it has that little video with the people with the hair. But
that used to be in the promotional videos of like the 90s.
But
yeah.
No, I mean, there's a whole Terry Crews situation where once you're on the ride, like it's dark and it's a roller coaster in space. So it's got like a Space Mountain vibe, but the ride is much more intense than Space Mountain, but also much smoother, right? Like these modern coasters are so smooth that, you know, you feel more, but it's not. Like, it's not uncomfortable at all. And then, yeah, the music is really super terrific. We had, the first time we had Conga, Miami Sound Machine, and then the second time we had Disco Inferno. Conga was definitely better, but they have, like, I think 10 or so songs, mainly from the 80s that they rotate between, all pretty pumping.
And I have to say, before this trip, I had never seen Guardians of the Galaxy. I had no interest in watching Guardians of the Galaxy, and we watched Guardians of the Galaxy last night. So you win, Disney. Synergy. The last thing I wanted to talk about with this trip is food, because honestly, food is probably one of the biggest reasons I like to go to Disney. And the food is just fantastic. Pretty much everywhere you go, there are some exceptions, but pretty much everywhere you go, you're going to have really good and really unique food experience. And I guess food is kind of why I like to travel anywhere, but Disney food is 2 thumbs up. So I did a lot of research, and luckily nowadays you only have to make your reservations 2 months in advance, whereas back before our last trip, it was 6 months in advance. But I'm very happy with the restaurants that we picked. I know I said we're commando, like all day tourists when we go to Disney, but sit down dining is one of those things that I feel like makes that possible, because you can kind of have a 45 minute to an hour kind of rest where someone brings you food and it's quiet and all that. So I mentioned our Magic Kingdom day, we ate at Skipper Canteen, which is a Jungle Cruise themed restaurant in Adventureland. And I think you can eat there if you're not a big Disney nerd. The story doesn't prevent you from enjoying the experience if you're not like all into Dr. Falls and all of that.
Yeah, it only has like a tenth of the cheesiness of the Jungle Cruise.
This is true.
Right? Like it's, they've got some of the jokes in there, but it's not like your server is literally a Jungle Cruise skipper. It's not to that degree.
You do have the option of ordering the Tastes Like Chicken because it is.
Yeah.
But even that aside, the food there is very good. And we were actually just talking that I feel like Skipper Canteen is really the best restaurant in the Magic Kingdom. The rest of the restaurants are really working on the like the Disney princess theming, or they are notoriously not good, although Tony's is, in theory, people of the internet are saying it's getting better.
Yeah.
But if you want a restaurant with flavor at Magic Kingdom, Skipper Canteen is where it's at.
And they have that pão de queijo, that Brazilian cheese bread that is so, so good.
Yes. It's a secret, though. It's not on the menu.
But then they tell you about it.
Your server will tell you about it while she turns around. Did you catch that? Our second day in Epcot, we went to San Angel Inn, which is the old restaurant in the Mexico Pavilion that's inside the pyramid. There is a newer restaurant that is on the water that is the Hacienda de San Angel.
Yeah, I've always wanted to eat here because, I'll tell you why, because when you go in the Mexico Pavilion, it just looks cool.
It does.
Ashley always said that the food doesn't have a good reputation, but we had never eaten there before, but I've always just wanted to like sit there with the candlelight and the sky and the volcano.
People of the internet are very torn on San Angel Inn. Like, I don't understand, because the food we had there was absolutely spectacular.
It was really good. And, you know, so I had a pork shank with mole, and it was incredible. It was really, really good. And they had Mexican wine, which is a whole thing. We can talk about Mexican wine during another wine break sometime. It's good. It's good, everyone. Mexican wine is good. It's hard to find, but it's really good.
It's hard to find in the U.S. because they don't really export it. The Mexican people like it so much that they don't want it to leave.
And they don't make a ton, because there are only certain parts of Mexico where you can really grow grapes. But what they make, they pretty much consume.
And I'll talk about this at the next pick, too. But I was very impressed with the wine selection in all of these restaurants. But yeah, San Angel Inn, don't believe the haters. Everything was delicious.
What did you have?
I had the ribeye tacos, which were very, very good, very flavorful. And it was served in a cast iron skillet, and you got to fill your own taco, which is really good.
Yeah.
So our Animal Kingdom day, we ate at Sanaa, which is in Animal Kingdom Lodge Kidani Village, which is the Disney Vacation Club section of Animal Kingdom Lodge. And this was probably the most exotic we went this trip, but it is African food with Indian flavors, I think is how they describe it.
Mm-hmm.
And so the flavors are more exotic than you would find at where we went the next day. But everything was very, very good. The flavors were great. Nothing was too spicy or off-putting or anything like that. I had a pork shank, just like he had the day before.
Yeah.
And what did you have?
I had, I can't remember what they call it, but you get a couple of different curries with rice. And so I had butter chicken and I had a Goan seafood curry. They were both terrific.
Sanaa is known for its bread service, which they, was it like six different types of bread and then a whole bunch of different things that you could put on it. This wasn't my first time at Sanaa. I went there with my mom years and years ago, and she's one of those people that can't eat spicy food. She says ketchup is spicy, and she was fine at Sanaa. So I always tell that to people who are nervous about Sanaa. If she can eat there, you can eat there.
It did leave me curious about African food with Indian flavors, because to me, most of what I saw on the menu was pretty much straight up Indian. So I don't know. I would love to know more what they mean by that. We did have South African wine, though.
Yes, that's another restaurant that had a really wonderful wine list, and it was almost hard to find your California Cabernet on that menu.
Mm-hmm.
And I should mention, too, that Sanaa has a beautiful location with big windows overlooking the savanna at Animal Kingdom Lodge. So going there during the day when you can actually see the animals is pretty cool.
Yeah, that's a good one.
Our last sit-down meal of the trip was at 50s Primetime at Disney's Hollywood Studios. And based on the name, you could probably tell that it is 50s themed. So all of the food was very old school. Fried chicken, meatloaf, pot roast. I had chicken pot pie. I mean, the food was good, but compared to what we had eaten earlier on the trip, it was a little boring, predictable.
The thing that I kept saying, and I'll say here too, is that for me, 50s Primetime is like someone else's nostalgia. If you've got nostalgia for that kind of food and having someone yell at you to say please or whatever. You could have a great time there. And the food was good. Everything that I had the sampler thing and it was all good. But it doesn't pull those emotional strings for me. And I was kind of wishing that we were somewhere a little more interesting.
But also, as I was saying earlier, before we were recording, there's not a lot in Hollywood studios.
Not a lot of options. It's true.
So you would have to leave the park, really, to get anything interesting.
I had more fun at Sci-Fi the last time we were there.
That's true.
Which is not my nostalgia either, but it was more interesting to me.
So if you're a picky eater, 50s, I'm sure we'll have something for you.
Totally.
But if you're someone that wants something more adventurous, I would look outside of Hollywood Studios.
That milkshake was good.
Oh, yeah. Peanut butter and jelly. I didn't taste any jelly.
No.
It was a peanut butter milkshake.
But it was good. I mean, there's nothing wrong with that.
And we also, of course, had great quick service meals in Animal Kingdom at Satuli Canteen, which is the quick service in Pandora. They had some really, really crazy things, and it was really hard to choose. But we ended up with the cheeseburger buns, bao buns, something like that, that were very good. Of course, Aloha Isle in Magic Kingdom, you can get your Dole Whip. We had it on top of a pineapple upside down cake, which was delicious. We had
Ronto Wrap.
Oh, yes. Ronto Wraps. And once again, I'm forgetting what Galaxy's Edge. We had Ronto Wraps in Galaxy's Edge that are probably one of my favorite quick service options.
The breakfast Ronto.
Yeah, we haven't tried the lunch one.
The breakfast one's got to be better because it's got an egg.
We went to Casey's Corner in the Magic Kingdom and had corn dog nuggets and some kind of pulled pork fries that were great. And
is that place called Sleepy Hollow? Is that a place?
Oh, yeah, yeah. Sleepy Hollow is our kind of go-to breakfast place in the Magic Kingdom. They have coffee. I think they had cold brew. Didn't I get a cold brew? Yeah, we both had iced coffee.
Because I take too long to drink hot coffee.
He takes too long to drink hot coffee.
Can you imagine?
When we're in the Magic Kingdom and we have places to see, you can't take an hour to drink your hot coffee. But anyway, Sleepy Hollow, what they're known for is their Belgian waffles with toppings. So their breakfast topping is a Nutella, kind of a hazelnut chocolate spread with fruit on top, and it's delicious. At lunch, they have one that has chicken on it, which I've never tried. But yeah.
We should mention, too, that the night we got in on the plane, we ate at Pop, which was kind of one that I was thinking was going to be pretty generic cafeteria food. And that was actually pretty good, too.
Yeah, you had mojo chicken.
Had mojo chicken.
And you later said that it was better than your meal at Tiffany's Fried Time.
Did I say that? It's true.
I think you may have said more flavorful.
It was certainly more flavorful and more interesting, but I don't mean to dunk on 50s prime time. It was fine. It really was fine.
So it was a fun, fast-paced 4 days at Disney World with some really long lines. So I think we kind of learned that maybe a long holiday weekend is not the time to go to Disney World.
Yeah, I feel like I'm good on that place in general for a couple years, probably.
That's what we said last time, and then I waited 2.5 years and booked another trip.
We've got a quick travel tip for you before we wrap up here. Ashley's got it. Go ahead.
So one of the little tricks that I've learned recently is when you're traveling somewhere to join a travel Facebook group for that destination. So if you're planning a trip to Disney, there are lots of groups. One of my favorites is Disney Foodies, where you can see all the crazy pictures of the delicious Disney food. Then there's also one that kind of goes into the nitty-gritty details of Genie, Genie Plus, and individual lightning lanes that could be very helpful for your Disney trip planning. But besides that, these Facebook groups have helped us a lot when it comes to other destinations. So when we were traveling to Portugal, I learned about, you know, using the Multibanco ATMs and declining the conversion rate twice to get your bank's conversion rate currently. And also when we were traveling to Puerto Rico, we found a kind of off the beaten track car rental place that ended up saving us a lot of money and also being very convenient and worked out really well for us. So that is a good thing to try.
The other thing you can do is be married to someone who joined the Facebook groups, I will say.
Well, and if you're someone that's not into social media, because I know I'm married to one of those people, I'm sure similar information can be found on Reddit and other places like that. But honestly, I've found great information just from regular travelers.
Yeah, groups are one of the best features of Facebook, for sure. That's all for today's episode of Go See, Do, Explore. Thank you for joining us and sharing in the wonder of travel.
Keep the spirit of today's adventure alive by checking out our blog at goseedoexplore.com for even more travel inspiration.
Don't forget to rate and review us wherever you listen to your podcasts. It really helps fellow travelers find us and join our community.
Until next time, keep exploring, keep dreaming, and keep traveling by any means necessary.
I'm Christopher.
And I'm Ashley, bidding you farewell and happy exploring.